What about new strategies? And I've been kind of curious about the issue of fulvestrant. You know, there have been the issues about the dose, et cetera, but in terms of whether that could add anything, I know there's been discussion, I think, within the intergroup about a delayed fulvestrant trial. I'm curious what's going on with that. And also the issue of combining an AI with fulvestrant, what your thoughts are about that strategy.
Historically, combining multiple endocrine strategies hasn't accomplished that much, with the exception of possibly ovarian suppression and tamoxifen, where there might be an advantage in metastatic disease. Pairing one endocrine therapy with another, as opposed to using them sequentially, just hasn't accomplished so much. And I guess if you're really looking for examples of that, the ATAC data are the cleanest example, where the combination wasn't better than tamoxifen. So I don't know that combining it's going to be all that valuable. Having said that, there are laboratory models where combining AI treatment with fulvestrant is a highly effective strategy. It's an interesting drug, fulvestrant. The PI for a study that the CLGB has just activated, where patients with hormone receptor positive breast cancer whose tumors have some degree of HER2 overexpression, FISH positive or 1 plus, 2 plus, or 3 plus by IHC, these patients...
1 plus, 2 plus?
1 plus, 2 plus, or 3 plus.
With FISH negative?
But FISH negative.
Really?
So we're looking for patients where there's some level of HER2 overexpression will be randomly assigned to fulvestrant alone versus fulvestrant plus the dual kinase inhibitor lapatinib as treatment for metastatic breast cancer. And there, the question we are looking at is whether or not inhibition of EGFR and HER2 can potentiate the effects of an antiestrogen therapy. And as you know, many laboratory models, most notably those of Kent Osborne at Baylor, have suggested that if you interfere with the two pathways at once, that you could make the antiestrogen effect more powerful or potent. So we're going to critically evaluate that in the CALGB, and I'm very pleased to be the PI for that trial. We lowered the bar for HER2 expression compared to just the strongly positives for a couple of reasons. One is that in patients who have aromatase inhibitor resistance, which is what's expected in this trial, there's some suggestion that you might get upregulation of HER2. The other is that the threshold for HER2 expression for a benefit from lapatinib has not yet been established. And the third is that because lapatinib has this EGFR inhibition potential, we wanted to see if some of that might be in play as well. So that study is now being activated around the country, and I hope it will accrue handsomely.
What do we know about the effect of lapatinib in HER2 negative or HER2 a little bit tumors?
There has been relatively little data in use of lapatinib for HER2 normal or HER2 low expressing tumors. In studies of very refractory breast cancer, patients who'd had anthracyclines and taxanes and capecitabine and whose tumors were HER2 negative, there was minimal, essentially zero activity of lapatinib in a open label phase 2 trial. And in their study of inflammatory breast cancer amongst tumors that were HER2 negative but EGFR positive, there was one response amongst 12 such patients with extensive inflammatory breast cancer. So on the one hand, it looks like the majority of the benefit of lapatinib will be realized in patients that are strongly HER2 overexpressing. On the other hand, whether that's something that can be still captured and exploited in the HER2 lower levels of expression, particularly as we're doing the study, is something we want to critically address.
Now, are you going to look at survival, or are you going to get into crossover or anything in this study?
So this study, the primary endpoint is progression-free survival. We obviously will look at overall survival and response rate as well.
But people can cross over after?
The presumption is that people could cross over, and obviously they can receive other anti-HER2 therapy down the road.
I know that the UCLA group, and Dennis Lehman particularly, has been very interested in the idea of fulvestrant and trastuzumab, you know, and to some extent because of what you said, but also they always liked the idea of getting rid of the estrogen receptor as opposed to another, and I guess they had some mechanism, I guess they had some laboratory data to support that. Where are we in clinical trials looking at that combination?
I'm not sure where studies stand with that. Fulvestrant does bind to the estrogen receptor and causes degradation of the receptor, which is, in theory, a potential advantage over selective estrogen receptor modulators like tamoxifen. Whether that is clinically valuable isn't really known. There are expected to be data at San Antonio looking at aromatase inhibitor therapy with or without the addition of trastuzumab.
Right.
And, you know, the guess from the press releases would be that, you know, that has some impact on progression-free survival and may not have any impact on overall survival or long-term outcomes. So I think there's still room to explore whether these combined biological therapies really are going to make a big difference for patients.